Hey, it's Emily Vogeltans, and you are listening to the Grove Podcast. Each month at the Grove, we invite someone on our team or a friend of our house to carry the teaching portion of the night. But we never promote who that person is going to be before the gathering. It's always a surprise. From the very beginning, our heart has been that people would want to come to the Grove to meet with Jesus, not for who is teaching. It's one of our favorite parts of the Grove. We recently had our dear friend Lisa Harper as one of our surprise guests for a Grove gathering, and while she was here, she sat down for a chat with Shelley Giglio for today's episode of the Grove Podcast. There is no one in the world like Lisa Harper. She is family to us here at the Grove. Lisa is a brilliant Bible teacher, an author, and an all-around fun person. But her favorite title is mom to her beautiful daughter, Missy, who she adopted from Haiti in 2014. You're going to love this candid and honest conversation with Shelley and Lisa as they dive into the deep end from the very beginning and talk about letting go of dreams, the pain of singleness, challenges of single motherhood, and of course, some of the funnier sides of life. So lean in and listen. Here's Shelley Giglio with Lisa Harper.
Hey, it's Shelley Giglio, and we are here for the Grove Podcast with one of, if not my, but don't tell anybody else, favorite people.
I'm grinning so big.
Oh my gosh, it makes me so happy that you're sitting here.
My cheeks are going to cramp.
Ah, y'all. It's Lisa Harper, and she's not just my favorite, but she is one of my favorites, and for many, many reasons. But you guys know that feeling because she's also your favorite. So you know what that feels like. But I love having this moment with you. And every now and then life affords us some moments together.
Yeah.
And we've already had a bunch of those this day.
Yeah.
And it's so life-giving to me to have you in my life. And as such a gift to have a friend like you. And so obviously to have a conversation like this is just bonus material to me. And I love that we can sit in this moment together. So thank you for
You're so typically gracious. Just always you exude grace, because I'm sitting here thinking you have carried me to the roof and lowered me to Jesus more times than I can count. So you're kind to say that about me, but that's...
Well, it's only because it's true. And God, you know, is so good about friendships.
Is exaggerating a tad.
I think it's true. It's amazing how when we need courage... Yeah. And I need it sometimes, and you need it other times. God seems to place us in the right time, in the right situation, or in the right moment together.
Yeah.
And sometimes that means us calling and saying, hey, I need you to be in that right moment. And sometimes he just aligns it so that we are in the moment together. Yeah. But
There was immediate affinity.
Yeah, well, from those deep friendships comes a lot of life.
Yeah.
And I mean, we've been sitting in here before we turned this podcast on, talking about theology and books that we're reading. And I just love it because... You know, scripture says friends spur each other on, and not just to be okay, which you do help me be okay, but also to know God better.
Right.
And I think the deepest friendships in my life bring me to a point of understanding of God that I would not have apart from.
Oh, absolutely. I think we've talked before about Leslie Newbegin, Anglican priest, and he said community, friendship, is the most effective hermeneutic of the gospel.
It is.
So really the way we understand Jesus the clearest is through the lens of real community, real friendship.
I believe that. So, it's such a gift.
Yeah.
Well, today we have a lot of things to talk about, and I have a long list.
Okay.
How big are you? Probably have a few things,
I'm ready.
Too. But I want us to talk about some stuff that I feel like maybe people wouldn't normally hear from this stage.
Okay.
So it's stuff that, I don't know, I'm not going to dig around in the deepest parts of you, although I'm open if God wants to reveal some of that stuff. But I think it gives people a chance to know you more when you can kind of talk about some things that you might not teach if you were, you know, teaching at the Grove even, or teaching at another women's Bible study, or maybe you're preaching at a church somewhere.
Yeah.
That this isn't the stuff that you would probably naturally talk about, but I think it's stuff that will be revolutionary for so many of our lives. And so I want to talk about it. Let's start with motherhood. Because, you know, one of the things, interestingly, that we have in common is that neither one of us have had our own biological children. And
did you think you would?
Of course I did. Yeah. I think there were moments I definitely assumed.
Yeah.
You know, everyone who marries in particular thinks, yeah. well, the next step is we have children. And
right.
and as soon as you're married, the people in your world start asking you, oh, when are yeah. you going to have kids? Because they, turns out, don't care about you at all. They really just care right. about your children.
Right.
So, yeah, I think there are moments in my life where I just assumed that that would be a part of my story.
Yeah.
But I think both of us have done a fair job, better at times than others, of understanding that God's story is sometimes bigger than our own.
Right.
And almost always different than what we assumed.
Yeah.
Right?
Wildly different. And I would say not just different, but for me, and I know you would say this as well, so much better
yeah.
than my biggest dreams. I mean, infinitely.
Crazy.
I would not have asked for this much. Now, I would have asked for a different timeline.
Yeah, of course.
But I wouldn't have asked for, my story is infinitely better than I could
yeah,
have.
Yeah, talk about it for a second. Talk about Missy and just the gift yeah, of her to your life and the stage of life you were in. And then I want to talk about some of the challenges.
My little girl, for those of you who are listening, call Shelley Aunt Shelley. That's how.
Because she is my niece.
She is your niece. She is absolutely your niece because you've been so dear to us. I brought her home from Haiti. It's almost been 5 years.
Crazy.
April 14th will be 5 years. Was in process for 2 years, lost two adoptions prior to Missy. So she.
What a gift.
Yeah, just extraordinary gift. But I'm also single and brought Missy home the year I turned 50. Mm. So went through menopause and motherhood at the same time. And she is, other than my salvation, getting to be Missy's mom, second mom. Her first mama died in Haiti of AIDS. And I'm Missy's second mom.
Yeah.
I was telling a friend the other day, sometimes I forget, because Missy's so healthy, that they said she won't, a lot of the doctors said she won't survive the adoption process. I forget, you know,
yeah.
sick she was.
I have to remind myself when I look at her,
yeah.
because she's so full of life.
And she had a bruise the other day that looked like, that can be related to a condition
right.
that's an HIV AIDS condition. And I just kind of had to catch my breath and realize it wasn't as dangerous as I thought it was. But sometimes I look at her and I go, I just can't believe what God has done, that he redeemed so much of my story, because I was just scared to death
yeah.
to get married. So the reason I didn't have children is I didn't get married, and I was afraid of marriage. I was afraid of that kind of intimacy.
Yeah.
You know, I would tease about it. I still tease about it. But truth of the matter is I was afraid. I was afraid of being left. I was afraid of being abused. Those were kind of the guys I was drawn to. So I'd get kind of close to the altar or where we were starting to talk serious, and then I would just panic
yeah.
because I wasn't drawn to good godly men. And I can still remember, Shelley, this is probably way too deep for the program, but I'm caffeinated.
I love it. More
I can
coffee,
remember
please.
Going in for my annual lady parts doctor, and it was the year I turned 40. And you know, 40 just seems like...
Yeah, it's a big marker.
Yeah, it's a milestone.
Yeah.
And I was trying to... I mean, I've always loved every age I've been, and I had told myself, you know, if I don't get a husband by the time I'm 40, I'm going to get a Harley. And so I got a Harley date. So it was, I mean, it was a fun year.
Which is in some ways a better gift.
But that
no,
year that
Louie,
I was 40.
I'm not telling the truth.
Yeah. That year I was 40, I went to my annual lady parts doctor visit. And the girl that had been my nurse for years, just kind of off the cuff, I think she just assumed, of course, I'd process this. She was like, oh, Lisa, by the way, you know, you won't be able to bear children because of age and some stuff. And I remember being like, oh, sure, because of course I wasn't married. She's assuming you're not even thinking that. That's
yeah.
probably not even in your spectrum of thoughts right now.
Right.
And I acted totally cool with it. And I went out in the parking lot. And I mean, I bawled like
yeah.
a baby because it was that end of, I always assumed I'd carry
yeah.
a child. So the fact that I get to be a mother is extraordinarily redemptive. But there will always be a little grief in me
yeah.
that I didn't have a big belly, that I didn't get to go to the pea in the pod, that I didn't. I always wanted to feel the miracle of a child in my own body. And so, yeah, there's a grief with that. I think I hope that my heart, I've always said I want my heart, I would rather it be hurt than hard.
Yeah.
And so that part of life, I hope, keeps me tender instead of self-protective.
Yeah, I think it has. And I think the way you've maybe just chosen not to live in the grief yeah. of it forever, just to have that portion of you that will never not grieve.
Right.
But to not be that grief, have that grief be in the driving force of
right.
your life.
And right.
and obviously some of that has been redemptive in Missy.
Yeah.
When she showed up, God was so gracious and kind to you in so yeah. many ways. And so I do think there is a redemptive part or element to that motherhood story.
Yeah.
But I also think it's your choosing to live as though God knows best.
I could not choose a child more custom fit for me.
It's unbelievable.
You know, you've been around Missy and I forget, it's crazy, but I forget sometimes that she's adopted
yeah.
because she's just my kid.
Yes.
And so, yeah, it has been extraordinary. It has changed the topography of my heart. I didn't know I could feel some of the things I feel, you know. And then people used to always say to me, if you're ever a parent, you'll see a facet to God, a facet of God that you haven't seen before. And you want to go, well, goodness gracious, be careful of that. That sounds elitist.
Right.
Because the Holy Spirit allows us to see every facet of God as we're growing toward maturity and Christlikeness. But what being Missy's parent has done for me is I am just undone by God's love for me. Because there's moments that I'll feel love for Missy that I didn't know I could feel that much. It's like he's expanded my capacity to love. And then there will be this little catch in the back of my heart, and I go, this is a drop in the bucket of compassion he has for me.
Yeah.
Like, he loves me more than this,
yeah.
what I'm feeling right now.
So,
and it does, the extravagance of God's affection, I think, has become a little more experiential to me. You know, I
yeah.
can believe it more
yeah.
because of getting to be Missy's mom. But yeah, it has been definitely, being her mom has changed not just the topography of my heart, but the trajectory of my life. Everything's different.
Yeah. Talk about, because motherhood, especially single motherhood. Be a lot of single moms listening to this.
Yeah.
Who are raising
single
kids on their
single
own.
Single again.
Yeah. Who are trying to figure out not just how to raise decent humans.
Yeah.
Although that is a really challenging
right.
goal.
Right.
But also to how to be okay in the midst of doing
right.
that.
Right.
And man, there is a lot of layers to that. But
oh, so many layers. I mean, you were counseling me at lunch today, you and Emily, because there's so many places I'm not enough. You know,
yeah.
I don't have enough hours in the day. I don't have enough wisdom. I think that's why God ordained it for kids to have moms and dads. But we live in a broken world. Everything's not perfect. And in Missy's case, she wasn't going to survive in Haiti. So one mom in the States was
a gift.
Yeah,
yeah.
For her and for me, too. But yeah, being a single mom and being an older single mom has been this magnifying glass over, I feel like, every single weakness in me. You know, my tendency
I mean, age single-handedly is a...
Oh, man, my goodness, I can't jump on the trampoline.
Why will my body
I
not do
depends.
What I'm telling
yeah.
it?
Yeah. I mean, it's like, wowza, Rooney, things are leaking that aren't supposed to leak. And I mean, it's just, it's wild. She came into the bathroom the other day, and I was stepping out of the shower, and she just stopped like the road runner. It's like she almost, you know, started running her feet backwards, and she went, Mama, what's wrong with your breasts? And you know, I looked down because I'm thinking, well,
I don't know what is wrong with them.
Yeah,
what's right with them? I don't know.
And I was like, well, I don't know, honey. And I thought maybe there's something, you know, underneath there I can't see. And she went, Mama, they're just so long.
That's hilarious.
And I was like, there you go,
there
lady.
It is.
So yeah, there's some really funny moments in the places where I don't have enough for what she needs, or in that case, maybe I had a little too much.
Funny.
But over and over again, being a single mom reminds me that he really is a father to the fatherless and a husband to the husbandless.
Yes.
Because my kid deserves a dad.
Yeah.
I wish she had a dad with yeah. skin on. If it's God's will for
yeah.
us,
yeah.
I'll be soft enough to marry. I'll be needy enough to marry. I won't be so afraid. I don't know what that
yeah.
is going to look like 5 years from now, 10 years from now. I know that today he's sufficient. I know that today his grace is sufficient. I know the places where I have been an impatient mom, a tired mom,
mm.
all these things, you know, I promised myself when I brought her home from Haiti, you know this, I had chickens, I was doing eggs and the whole organic thing, and that lasted about a week. And I remember
they were like, I can either be a mom or I can have chickens.
Oh my goodness, my first massive failure. Oh, I was even growing my own vegetables and doing the puree and the whole nine yards. And I remember sitting across from her at McDonald's. She, you know, she couldn't speak English. She's just loving, just eating French fries like there was no tomorrow. And I'm sitting across from her thinking of all the horrible additives
the way
that she was eating with chicken nuggets. Yeah, and I thought, I'm the worst mother in the history of time. Like, I was organic for
a week.
And then
you were like, oh, it turns out every mother does that.
Exactly. Yes. And then you go, you know what? I'm doing the best I can. So the places where, as a mom who's single, who travels, the places where I go, okay, I can't do paleo muffins for the homeroom snack.
Right.
I can go to Whole Foods and buy some killer paleo muffins. I can't do everything. It's like over and over again, God is whispering to me, I want you to remember this when you come to me. Yeah. I don't expect you to be perfect. You know, perfection is overrated. Right after I brought Missy home, Beth Moore and Priscilla had me come on this mom's broadcast. I think I'd been a mom for like 2 months.
You're like, I'm an expert. I know everything.
But we had this little mom's, it was for Mother's Day. I don't even remember what it was, some program. But, you know, they both gave these, you know, dissertations on how to be good moms. And then it was like, what you got? And I was like, really, all I have is gratitude. I don't even know how to do the mom schedule yet. You know, my mom bag is 400 pounds because I don't know what to bring at this point yet. I've got iPads and, you know, 2 liter
things
bottles
you might
of water.
Need.
Yeah.
Yes.
Boogie wipes for days. Yep. I don't know how to do this yet, but I'm so stinking grateful God is allowing me to. And 5 years in, I realized that's my greatest strength, is just being undone of the kindness of God that He allows me to be a mom. So I think gratitude goes a long, long way. Yeah. And then Beth said something to me. She may not even remember it all those years ago. I said, Beth, if you could distill your wisdom in being a mom and just kind of one takeaway for me as an old, new mom, what would it be? And she paused. And you know how Beth is. I thought she was like pondering something in Hebrew. And she went, Lisa, just try to say yes more than you say no.
Wow.
And that has come back to me.
Wow.
1,000 times. How can I say yes to Missy? Not to spoil her, but to affirm her and to build her up and to help her be exactly who God wants her to be. She's not my mini-me. She is her own unique miracle. And so that has been really fun in recognizing I get to shepherd her heart.
Yeah.
I don't imprint. I don't create her heart.
Yeah.
God has given her already this brave, amazing, incredible heart. So how can I steward and shepherd that in a way that both honors the Lord and is the best for my kid?
Man,
you know,
so
really
good.
Helps her live her best life.
So you say, and just in talking about it, and then we'll move on to some other things too, but you talk about just learning that there is no such thing as a perfect mom, and that grace is extended to you as a mom, and even I think more so as a single mom,
right?
As somebody who's providing really both sides of an equation into a child's life.
Yeah.
And I think as moms and in our culture, generally speaking, we're not grace-centered people toward ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I were to look at you, see your circumstance, I can extend grace all day long to you because I look at you raising Missy and I look at your life and I look at your full-time job and I look at where you live and how you travel and I say, there's grace for that, Lisa.
Mm-hmm.
There is no such thing as perfection.
Mm-hmm.
So just extend grace.
Mm-hmm.
But to yourself and to myself, that's a whole different scenario. But I believe God extends so much grace to us.
Yeah.
And so how do we teach ourselves, even in things like motherhood, to be grace-filled toward ourselves?
Yeah. Well, I'm afraid lightning is going to strike the studio. It's a lot easier to preach than it is to live it. What I'm learning to do, two kind of simple things. One is to do the next right thing.
Yeah.
I am really guilty of projecting, of looking at what next week or next month or around the corner, what's going to happen when Missy's in high school. And there's things I worry about as a single mom, practical things, financial things, like, oh, what's going to happen with you? And I have to go, Lisa, do tomorrow. you have today's grace today. Yeah. You're going to have tomorrow's grace tomorrow. Yeah. So do the next right thing. Of course, plan ahead. But be present in the moment more than you are worrying about the future or grieving the past. And then I am learning, and I'd say I'm in kindergarten here. I'm learning to be needy. I am not very good at asking for help. Right. And I think that's where I'm learning grace is to go, I'm not doing this well. Could you help me with this? And I am all the time, I mean, I can give you the microcosm of Missy's hair. You know, Missy's Haitian. She's got this beautiful, curly, urban hair. Well, I knew because I'd watched the Chris Rock special, you know, on
exactly.
hair.
Exactly.
So I knew before I brought her home, exactly. this is out of my wheelhouse. Like, I've got to get some help
this.
Here.
Yeah.
And so I was constantly going to my Black friends, to my friends who knew how to do urban hair, like, y'all help me, show me how to braid, what are the best products? And that was easy because it's a way of kind of broadening your community. And I have a lot of friends who don't have the same ethnic background or demographic as I do. So I love that. I think homogeneity is way overrated. But it's like the Lord is teaching me, you take that microcosm of how fun and easy it was for you to ask for help with Missy's hair, and you expand that to all areas of your life because you don't have a dad with skin on.
Yep.
The other day we were driving home from school and Missy said, Mama, we need a daddy. And I said, baby, you need a daddy. I need a baby daddy. And then I went, no, don't say that at school. Don't say that at school.
Please don't ever repeat me.
Everything I say. But we don't right now have a dad with skin on. And so I've learned, okay, let me ask my friend's husbands, hey, can y'all help fill in here? Because there are things that she needs to learn now that actually need to come from a man, a godly man, not from me. You know, Kylie and Tim, my friends, Tim, every Valentine's Day, takes Missy out. They have kind of an uncle-daughter date, and he talks to her, even at this age, she's 9, about the kind of guys who are safe and the kind of guys she should be attracted
to. So good, so helpful.
Well, that needs to be coming from a godly man, not from me.
Yes.
It's hard for me to ask for help because of my own shame issues. You know, for years, I thought God had saved me because he felt sorry for me, not because he delighted in me so I could teach theology. I could sit in seminary and fill in the papers, but at the end of the day, I still had some massive shame issues. And that's why I wouldn't ask for help. It wasn't that I didn't believe in grace. It's that I didn't think I was worth it.
Yeah.
And
wow.
So to recognize that there's still that bruise, God has healed it a lot, but there's still a bruise in my heart of when I don't ask for help, it's because I don't think I'm worth interrupting somebody else's life. And I have to go, okay, but you want more from Missy. So don't let your shame and your lack of asking for help and really ultimately trusting in God's grace and God's sufficiency impact your kid. So we're turning the ship. You know, it's taken a while because I was self-sufficient and prideful. I got to wrap verses around it and make it look like
spiritual.
I was, spiritual, even brave.
Yeah.
And so God has been gently spanking me for a long time on that one.
I would just encourage you that I see movement.
Thank you.
So as a friend who does stand close, I see you recognizing your needs and admitting them and asking for help in ways that you might not have had naturally.
Right.
You know, somebody standing right there offering, but you have people in your life who would love to contribute. And and just encourage people that are listening too. I think sometimes we rob people of their opportunity by being prideful and thinking that we can.
Mm-hmm.
And so many people will receive from God by giving to you, Lisa, or to Missy.
Mm.
And when you refuse to allow them to do that, it takes from them one of the things that God's gifted them most to give.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be a robber of people's beauty and opportunity.
Yeah.
I actually want to allow people to step into the places that God's called and gifted them for. And if it's to the end that I get helped, then I'll receive it almost so that they can receive the blessing that they were intended to get.
I love
and I
the
think
way,
you have to kind of think about it sometimes in some other form other than just me and Missy and what we need.
Right.
But almost like I don't want to rob somebody else either.
No, I love that you frame it that way because the line kind of demarcation, if you will, for me emotionally is I want to give more than I take.
Yeah.
And it's a real binary thinking. And it that's not the way God sees it. That's not the way Scripture narrates it. But that's almost how immature it is sometimes in my heart. I don't want to be selfish. I don't want to. So instead of recognizing I'm robbing somebody of their opportunity and the blessing, I see it as, oh, goodness, don't be a selfish pig. And I have beat myself up over things that are not at all the way God has laid it out. So I actually love it that you frame it that way, because it helps me recognize this isn't about selfishness. This is about body. Yeah. You know, this is about the body
community of Christ.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah.
So I want to talk about a couple different things. I want to talk about the anxiety and weight of being single at your age.
Mm.
Of feeling responsible.
Yeah.
Of feeling like there's really no one else that's going to carry some of this weight.
Yeah.
And talk about the anxiety that comes with, I mean, we were laughing today at lunch about a car story, which you might need to tell us a smidgen of. But
yeah.
That but of just of that being sort of a funny moment, but yet a revealing moment who am I going to call? I'm in this situation.
Right.
Who am I going to call?
Well, I'll tell you, I can't give you the car story. So
you
hard,
need
concise,
to just, you
so
might,
not my gift.
Come on.
Well, I'm going to tell you a goat story instead.
Okay.
I've always envisioned, like you, you know, my dad had a farm when I was growing up, and I kind of romanticized farm life.
Yes.
I've always wanted, like, I was so proud when I got my first John Deere, which in a sense, like, not at all feminine, but I had a pink camo John Deere hat. Missy does too. Anyway, I've always envisioned like this, you know, just like we've got the sunflowers and we've got the vegetable garden. We've got, I love that whole, I love having land.
Yeah.
Well, I made the mistake of buying goats. Now I got little goats, little miniature Paris Hilton goats.
Cute.
Well, I had this hill, it's hard to mow, and I thought they'll be cute, you know, kind of look like a little really picturesque. And
you had England in mind.
Maybe.
You were thinking like a hillside.
Maybe. Kind of a rednecky kind of England.
Of course. A little red dirt, but it's fine.
Well, these goats were really fragile. These goats I bought that, by the way, one of them I paid for in utero for blue eyes. So that's how gullible I was. Anyway,
the
goat breeders were laughing all the way to the bank. Anyway, one of my goats died and I came home and there's this dead goat. And I had not thought about that. Like I hadn't processed that part.
Of course not.
Well, I came home from a trip, sick as a dog. I'd gotten the flu. I was on the road. Well, I'm carrying this dead goat because I don't know what to do with a dead goat. But I knew I probably shouldn't have the dead goat around the other goats because I thought, what if it's some kind of contagious goat thing? So I think the only thing I'm going to do is carry the goat up the hill because then there's all these woods behind my house. And I thought, I'll stick it up there. It was really
like a
cold.
Goat burial ground.
Yeah, kind of a goat burial ground. Was I'm walking up the hill. I was wearing friend pants because, you know, when you have the flu and you don't want to wear pants with elastic, you need something really loose. Well, I'm carrying the goat with both hands so the dead goat won't swing and get on me because it's a stiff goat. Was I'm going up the hill and we live on kind of a busy rural highway. My pants start coming down and they're friend pants. And so, you know, I'm home by myself with the flu. You don't have to wear friend pants with underwear.
You're fine.
And so I have to choose in that moment whether to like get dead goat on me or moon, you know, these rural people.
Please
who
tell
just
me you chose to moon people.
I did.
Okay,
I did.
Great.
I showed it was a giant eclipse. But as funny as it was, I remember also being kind of mad. Because I thought, Lord, you know, I'm killing myself here. You know, I've been celibate for a million years. You know, I'm killing myself here. I need a man to, like, carry dead goats up the hill.
Right.
And it sounds
silly,
but...
Or at least someone to help me keep my pants up.
Yeah, keep my pants up. Somebody to buy me a belt. But in that moment, it kind of became a bigger thing. It was silly, but I thought, I'm tired of doing everything by myself.
Yeah.
You know, it's on me to pay the bills. It's on me to mow the yard. Yeah. It's on me to... And that's where it gets hard. Being single and feeling not picked by the right guy, it's not a Valentine's Day kind of thing anymore. You know, I missed the romance when I was younger. Now I just sometimes want somebody to help me navigate life.
Yes.
And so, yeah, there is definitely a weight. Sometimes it's funny, and sometimes it's a lying in bed at midnight staring at the ceiling going, okay, Lord, I know that you say... You're a husband, the husbandless, but I actually need that to be a little more tangible right now, because I just need help. You know, I need somebody to put their arm around me and go, "We'll do this together." Or, "Honey, rest for a minute. I've got this."
Yeah.
So there is, for me, there has been a very real weight. I'm content in being single. I'm not looking for a husband. I'm not on eHarmony. You know, I tease and say my husband is lost, won't stop to ask for directions.
He'll find his way, I believe.
Yeah, if that's God's will, he absolutely will. Yeah. But that doesn't mean that in my contentedness, I think is how you pronounce it, that I don't feel sometimes some very real weight of, you know, I feel it every time I go to the hospital with Missy. There's nobody else in the hospital waiting room but me. And sometimes that feels heavy.
Yeah.
Sometimes I think, okay, Lord, I know you're sovereign. I know you love her infinitely more than I do. But I'm an old mom. If something happens to me, you know, there's no other parent. If something happens to me when she's in junior high school and she's already lost enough, and then I just have to go. All right, I can't stay there.
Yeah.
He's been so kind. And I've been to a lot of therapy.
And that's
he's
good.
Been so kind. My deep end is not as deep anymore. Mm. So I'm not afraid of drowning anymore. I can kind of go to the weighty place and go, all right. Now I've got to go ahead and get some sleep because tomorrow morning I've got to pack or I've got to get on a flight or I've got to get her to school.
It's a new day with new needs.
I've got math homework. And so it usually isn't so weighty that I feel crushed, but I definitely know it's there.
Well, you know, as people who are bystanders to that and watching you live this, I would say that what we see is a trust in God that's deeper than a lot of people would naturally have. I think when we can depend on other things and other people and things that we set up to be protections to our life, that we sometimes miss out on the actual trust in a God who promises he'll be enough.
Yeah.
And I see you as a person that I respect so much because of the way that you depend and trust on God and that deepest sense of, I am going to go to sleep tonight. If you don't come through for me, I don't have any other plan.
Yeah.
There isn't a backup to the backup. You're kind of what I've got.
Yeah.
And man, as somebody who longs for that to be true of my life, you beckon me to that place.
I see that in you much more than I see that in myself.
Man, it's true for me.
But he has forced me there.
Yeah.
Trust does not come naturally for me.
For anyone.
Even with God. Yeah.
For anyone.
Yeah.
We're a distrusting group of people.
Yeah.
In each other and certainly in God that he's going to be enough for us. Yeah.
And he has come through with Missy and I. I always go back to, you know, the leftover baskets of loaves and fishes, you know, his one little boy's Chick-fil-A lunch feeds 15,000 people or thereabouts. And then there's all this left over. That's what he's done for me in those moments that literally I think we don't have enough. You know, I was telling you when I brought, and God has provided all our needs and then some. But I remember doing, a friend just said, have you figured in Missy's medical expenses into your budget? This is when I'm in the adoption process, but she's still in Haiti. And I was like, you know, I hadn't really done that. You know, I love Dave Ramsey from afar, but I don't want him all up in my house. So
he's going to show me how to live.
Yeah,
that's going to be hard.
He's going to make me quit going to get coffee. Anyway, I did the budget. And I remember being like, oh, crud. Like,
her medical expenses, her drug
exorbitant
needs, things.
Yeah. And I hadn't figured it in. And I thought, well, there is a deficit here. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm going to be, you know, getting aluminum cans. And he has provided in excess.
It's just beautiful.
And I haven't even been that intentional. I was so busy the first year helping her learn English and getting
growing
her
those vegetables that you
could
smash
her and those silly chickens and dead goats. Yeah, I'm done with the goats and the chickens. But he just provided. It's like it was this beautiful, quiet grace.
That's so awesome.
I almost forgot to be panicked, you know? And he just exceedingly and abundantly provided. So I do think the more desperate you are, the clearer his provision is. Because I know if he didn't provide it, there's nobody else waiting in the wings. But he's done so much more than just provide. Yeah. He's
and
been
just,
lavish with us.
And just hearing that and celebrating that that's who he is.
Yeah.
It's not just something he does for his people, but it's actually who he
it's who he
says
is.
He is.
And it says he delights to give.
Yeah.
And again, that's, I still have to grow there because sometimes I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. I don't want to be a needy kid. Like, I want you to go busy yourself and wherever you need
I'm
to
sure
do
you
in
have
the Middle East or
run.
Africa.
Yes.
Right. And it's like he's going, I delight yes. to give to you and Missy. Yes. And that has been, that's been sweet. I stay in his arms a little longer before I start wriggling out trying to be a good kid.
Yeah.
But I feel like that's what he's been teaching me for years is you just linger in my embrace.
Yeah.
And that's that doesn't come natural to me.
Yeah. Well, you're doing a good job of letting God be God.
I'm learning.
Last thing I want to talk about, because we're running out of time, which I knew we would.
Shocker.
We could sit here all day, and yeah. we may have to come back and do it again soon. But I want to talk about the fact that you're a learner, that I've never been around you when you're not learning something, and that you're not just busy to teach somebody else what you learned, but you're learning it so that you can know more about the God that you say that you love so intimately.
Yeah.
And I love that about you. I love the way that you have so much desire to know God. And just talk about the fuel that burns in you. And were there moments you had to ask God to help you with that?
Oh, or? Goodness gracious. Every moment I've gone back to get my doctorate, not to get a doctorate, but to study.
Yeah.
Practically, it's really good for Missy as a third grader to see this old mama God has given her growing.
Wow.
I don't want to ever be stagnant in any facet of my life. But I am, from the time I was a little kid, I'm just curious. I love to learn. And when it comes to who God is, you know, he just gets better.
Yeah,
The more you dive into him, it's... There's no other shoe that's going to drop. You don't go, oh, I knew he'd be punitive. You know, you go, oh my goodness, he's even kinder. He's even more gracious. He's even holier. He's even more compassionate. But I have started a doctoral program, and I am by far the dumbest person in
that
my
is not
no,
even
no.
close
by
to
far.
True.
Oh, by far, by
oh,
far, by
seriously.
Far.
Seriously.
But we had this time in class last month where our professor sent us out to pray through one of the parables. And he's this uber academic guy, brilliant guy. And so I was trying to just not mispronounce some of the words in class, you know. And so, but there's only five of us taking this particular class for doctorate. So
you're
it's
on
like
the hot
you're,
seat all
yeah,
the time.
I can't be sitting there, you know, looking
the back
on,
of the class.
Yeah, usually I can Google and figure out some words, but this class I was exposed. Anyway, I go out in the hallway and I am undone by this parable. And I mean, within, of course, I'm the only girl in class. I'm sobbing.
Wow.
I'm so undone by the kindness of God, the extravagant forgiveness of God when we repent, even with our elder brethrenness. That wasn't the parable I was looking at, but I was just undone. I thought, I want to be squeezed, because that's how you make good wine and good olive oil, and you're squeezed. That crucible is where you really, I'm processing all this stuff. I go back into class. These other smarties, like one of my classmates, you know, has his master's from Harvard. I was like, yeah, one of these things is not like
you're
the
like
other
me
ones.
Too, but don't oh, look yeah. at my resume.
Yeah, I was like, oh, law, let me just try not to talk too much and expose myself. Anyway, they all start talking about this parable. We've all been given as an assignment to pray through. So it's not hermeneutical approach. It's not. It's just praying through it. I come back in, tear strained face. I've been processing the wrong parable.
That is brilliant.
So I'm so undone.
But you are extremely undone by the wrong one.
And I had to confess. Like, I had to tell my professor, sorry.
By the way, I read the wrong thing.
Yeah. So that, to me, is the hallmark of my learning, is I'm usually just a titch behind the class. But I love perusing the subject of who God is.
Yeah.
Because, for one thing, it informs who I am. I'm his kid.
Yeah.
He loves me.
Yeah.
But it just gets better. It makes me more secure.
Yeah.
Makes me a better mother.
Yeah.
It makes me just wake up every day and go, I can't believe I get to do this all over again. I think diving into who God is fuels gratitude in us.
Well, one of the things I think you do best is appreciate. And when you're in those environments of learning, I know that you could be that you are a smarty pants and could be that personality. But what I see in you instead is a person that understands that it's connected to the goodness and graciousness of God for your life. And so you have so much responsive gratitude. When I see God, all I can do is thank him I just feel grateful mm-hmm. when I see what God's done for me as it relates to Missy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, is it hard and challenging? And are there days that I'm outmatched by it? Certainly there are.
Yeah.
But most of what I feel, and you already said this earlier, is gratitude. Mm-hmm. How would God allow me to mm-hmm. be in this moment with this child?
Yeah.
How is he that good?
Yeah.
And when I see it, even what you post on social media, what you choose to talk about, there is a thanksgiving that comes through your life that emanates to the people that surround you, that teaches us how to be grateful kids. And I personally just want to say thank you for the way that you live your life that way and the way that you choose to talk about God in light that shows that he is good, he is kind, and that he means well for our lives. And does that mean circumstantially it's all going to work out? No. For me, never has it all been seamless and exactly like I thought.
Yeah. Yeah.
But at the same time, he is good. And our hearts can focus kind of on the travails of the path or on the goodness of the shepherd. And you have a good shepherd. Mm. And what I see is his goodness in your life. And so thank you.
Whenever you speak, I find myself going, ditto. I'm like, golly,
oh my goodness, likewise.
Takes me forever to land the plane. You speak, and I'm like, it's C.S. Lewis in a skirt.
What are you talking
goodness
about?
Goodness gracious, you just drop wisdom bombs. But yes, when you're saying, do you see the travails of the path of the goodness of the shepherd?
Yes.
Here's the thing I love about being 55. I look back over my life, and I go, I've never seen his back.
Yeah,
he has always been good. Has life been hard? Of course life has been hard. Yeah. We live in a broken world. Has he ever been anything but kind and compassionate and faithful and generous? No. I don't always see that because we see through the glass dimly, but that's the thing I love even about being an old mother. The things I would have focused on, keeping the car perfect, you know, making sure she was a great reflection on me, all those things where I was still so broken in my 30s, even though I had a high metabolism. Now in my 50s, I feel like I'm able to major on the majors a little more effectively.
Yeah. Thank you for teaching us that way. Love you so much.
I love you more.
We hope you gleaned so much goodness and gold from that conversation between Lisa Harper and Shelley Giglio. We are so thankful to Lisa for her generosity to not only come and serve the women of Atlanta at The Grove, but also the gift of her time and wisdom pouring into today's podcast. If you want to learn more about Lisa and get some of her resources into your hands and heart, take a minute to visit lisaharper.net. And as always, to all of our Atlanta listeners, we would love to see you at The Grove next month. You can learn more about The Grove and our church at PassionCityChurch.com and follow along with us on Instagram at PCC_The Grove. And hey, if you're loving this podcast, please be sure to share it with a friend. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on The Grove Podcast.